Welcome to the CLT podcast, a series all about things related to learning and teaching in higher education, brought to you by the Centre for Learning and Teaching at Leeds Beckett University. In this episode, we have our very own Professor Susan Smith, and she'll be talking with Professor Devine Sharura from York St John University about encouraging positive learning relationships during these difficult times. Wherever you may be listening from, we hope you enjoy.
I'm Professor Sue Smith from the Centre for Learning and Teaching at Leeds Beckett. I'm really delighted to welcome to this podcast my former colleague, and now he's Professor of Counselling Psychology at York St John, Professor Devine Sharura. Welcome. He's an accomplished professor, writer and psychologist, and currently the course director for the Doctorate in Counselling Psychology programmes at York St John, as I mentioned. Devine's compassion and enthusiasm for community, love and interconnectedness are really present and ever present at the heart of his research and practice. He's always been inspired by the works of Dr. Carl Rogers and working with the Red Cross and other organisations, and he went on to further study counselling and therapeutic studies. Dr. Carl Rogers' humanistic and client-centred approach is something that is thematic in Devine's career and research as he explores relationships, psychological and therapeutic relationships throughout the lifespan, and the value of relationships, which offers the right kind of conditions for healing and transformation. His main expertise lies in complex trauma across the lifespan, working with families and individuals presenting with trauma from loss and tortures, and he has 15 years of incredible work supporting asylum seekers and refugees, and he explores the difference and diversity and dynamics of relationships, issues of power and discrimination and prejudice, and we will be drawing on some of this today. He has many notable publications on therapy and counselling, and is a well-known contributor to international and UK conferences focusing on love and therapy in relationships, and he has a publication focusing on person-centred counselling and the Psychotherapy Handbook. He's also doing COVID-19 timely related research, and that's still in progress, looking at the effects on early years practitioners as key workers during COVID and trying to understand the impact of COVID-19 on mental health during and following lockdown, following people who've been asked to self-isolate or shield throughout the pandemic. We welcome you today, Devine, and this is the first of our CLT podcast series. And today, Devine and I will talk about some of these issues, but in relation to teaching and learning, and how we can best encourage positive learning relationships during these challenging times. Hello, Devine.
Good morning, and thank you for that very warm introduction and kind introduction, Professor Smith. Really excited to be here today, and I hope that our podcast today really offers something that's important for all the listeners. Thank you.
Well, I hope so too, and we welcome you, and I thought we might start by just trying to tease out what we think are the main challenges for human relationships during these testing times. And let's just try and think particularly about teachers and learners in these times and going forward. How can you contribute to this argument, Devine? What would you like to say on this matter?
Well, thank you. It's such an interesting and important question, I think, particularly given that we're recording this podcast just before we fully come out of lockdown, we hope. And I also think that it's important for us to take a step back to think about and to reflect on what has contributed to these challenges. Mm-hmm. Now, as a psychologist, I always say there are always challenges to human relationships. And the idea of us exploring what contributes to the relationship challenges, and in particular for teachers and learners, is so important for their learning. I would like to start by saying something about my own worldview, in which I see relationships really at the center of our lives, because we are relational beings. Neuroscience tells us that. mental well-being, mental ill health tells us that right across different cultures. And reflecting on the times we're living in has meant a number of things for us. Well, the first is we're facing the same challenges as the students and learners that we support. And this, for example, relates to existential meaning, recently homeschooling during lockdown, the uncertainty, the stress, and so on. I also think, if I speak personally, but also from speaking to many colleagues, we've had to face ways of working online in a way that was imposed on us, if you like.
Forced on us suddenly.
So I can think of colleagues who, back as far back as 2014, when I was writing about working online, and certainly Leeds Beckett University was at the forefront of thinking about this way before we ever thought it would be upon all of us, colleagues who were not interested because they preferred the face-to-face contact with students. But this then, whilst important to have that face-to-face, because of the lockdown and social distancing guidelines, and we had to look for a way forward, we found ourselves facing a real challenge in how we develop our pedagogy that is fast advancing, that can meet that importance of authenticity in relationship. And I think that's a real challenge. And I'll say another couple of challenges and then I'll pause. Another challenge that we've faced is around innovation and relationship boundaries in what I call the teaching frame.
Yeah.
Now, what do I mean by that is when students were coming to the lecture theater, to the lecture hall, to class, everyone understood what the relational boundary was, you know, how you dress appropriately and so on. Now
we were used to it, weren't we? It just seemed so familiar.
It did. You're right. It did. And now speaking to colleagues, and certainly in some classes, I have real insight into people's homes, into people's boundaries. And in some ways, they have to mine. We have insight into each other's noises, and that impacts on the nature of relationship, both positively and negatively. And very lastly, I will say that ultimately, on one hand, whilst we've had no choice about engaging with technology and relationships in a way that helps us to have an open mindset, I think it has also brought a real challenge to our relationships around, for me, disconnecting. Before the lockdown, we could get out of bed, get ready, go to work, and that's a separate space, our home space. And now there seems to be an enmeshment of I get out of bed and I'm in my office and I'm at home at the same time. So that's
the boundaries get blurred.
The boundaries get blurred.
I actually thought, Divine, just before we move on to discuss some of the other challenges, whether you could define what you mean by open mindset. I don't mean to land that on you, but I just think it's quite a useful thing to explain.
Yes, I think that what we mean by open, or certainly what I mean by open mindset, is being open to the many dynamics that might emerge as I'm teaching. So sometimes, you know, people's cameras are on. I understand people are homeschooling. A toddler might come and go, mommy, mommy, mommy. And I have to go, please mute your mic. And try not to let that get in the way of the content and relationship with the whole class. Yet not be disturbed by it to the point that it takes me off track to what I'm trying. So the open-mindedness is this real, and you mentioned Carl Rogers earlier, real acceptance and real openness to the nature of human dynamics and challenges that people are facing. Many have faced trauma. It's important to have a trauma-informed approach. I'll give you another example. There are times when I've had to say, we're going to go into groups now, but I understand some of you might not be able to. And often one or two have opted not to because they're grieving, because a loved one has died because of COVID. So that real mindset to, we've never been into this territory before. and everyone is doing their best. You know, this is idea of virtue ethics. You know, we really hope and trust that everyone is doing their best, and we work with what emerges.
Thank you. That was really clear. And I think for our listeners who are teachers, who may have not been trained in this kind of approach, understanding what open mindset is important for them to internalize. We'll just move on to what you think about what impact all this technology through the screen has on the students and the staff and their mental health, their behaviours and their learning. And whether you can just tell us if there's any new evidence that has emerged to contextualise that.
Yes, let's start with the idea of evidence first. I think that as a researcher, I am interested in evidence-based practice. So this is evidence that's emerging from research. But I'm equally interested in what we call practice-based evidence. And for me, practice-based evidence is the evidence that is emerging from the people who are doing it.
Yeah.
Ourselves, our colleagues, who are teachers, who are educators. And every day we're having conversations about really the impact of teaching through online platforms in the screen, and how it's affecting mental health, how it's affecting behaviors, how it's affecting learning. If we think about some of the challenges that I'll now share, I think there's the challenges that are psychological challenges, which include stress. The stress of moment by moment having to hope that I'm doing this lecture, my internet isn't going to drop. The stress of hoping that everyone can hear me clearly and that everyone is able to connect. The stress that emerges from knowing that one is at home, but they're having to manage that home space also as a workspace. The stress that comes from me trying to speak at an international conference, and all of a sudden the council have decided they're going to put new pipes in the road, and so they have
it's a nightmare.
The stress of the neighbor's dogs barking, all of which can't be helped, you know. So it's managing that. But also I think that there is the repetitive strain, physical stress on our bodies of having to keep our necks a certain way. We've had conversation about this and this, about I try and move and stand every half an hour, so that if I'm at my desk for 6-7 hours, I'm not in the same position and then my back is stiff. So physically that's something that we really have to take care of. The obsessive compulsive tendencies that kick in, and I know for myself, I took a week's annual leave the other week, and it took me about 3 days just to switch off from this real need to just check I haven't got another email, or just check I haven't missed something before I could totally relax. And that's telling, because the enmeshment of technology and ways of working has become very much a part of our lives.
And do you think that's worse now? Do you think, say, you'd had holiday before, you would have relaxed quicker?
Well, I think in some ways it might have taken less time, because I had a clear demarcation between I'm on annual leave, I've switched my computer off in the office, I've locked my door, before that I've watered my plants, and I arrive home, and it's home. But now I think neurologically we are wired to have a grid in our brains about what we do each day. And I think that has more research to be done on it, but I think there's something to be said.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I think also there's something about, I don't know about you, Sue, but the burnout from looking down a camera each day.
Oh,
yeah.
It's tiring.
Particularly in some contexts where the learners don't have their cameras on. And it feels like we are speaking to this obese, you know, that's that many colleagues have said about how much they've struggled with that. let me
so end you can't this. See the faces of the students that you're teaching. So that's unusual for teachers.
It is because we are relational beings.
Yes, you know, we are.
We're taught about body language, and sometimes mm-hmm. I've been able to tell if a learner or a student is struggling to understand a particular mm-hmm. concept. I might pause. I might say, "You look a bit puzzled," or "You look like," and at the moment, you know. So, but there are other ways, and we'll come to those. But let me end on this. I think it can also be positive for some. I think that there have been surveys that I've done with colleagues for some of our learners, and some have said how much they've loved learning online. Actually. You know, that it's made it better for them.
And I suppose that shows the diversity of humans, their difference, and that we're not all the same. I think when we have a teacher viewpoint, we went into teaching because we like humans, we like their faces, we like to look at them, we're social beings. And some teachers struggle through the camera, but maybe the students don't. Particularly the younger ones who are more used to screens.
I think there's a whole range of both students and educators who have found, I think there's something to be said about, I have colleagues who used to commute and students right across the M62 corridor. You know, and working online has made us able to connect to, and professionally to all kinds of conferences. But the very last point is, I think it's important for us to reflect when we're thinking about mental well-being, mental health, the impact of working online. I think it's important for us to reflect on what do each of us need to do? Whatever our thoughts, whatever our position about it, what do we need to do to keep mentally well and physically healthy? How can we ensure we take breaks, that we use technology to our advantage? For example, using breakout rooms, the chat facility, incorporating numerous exercises into the experiences.
So now I think it's a really good moment to think about the practical things that we can do, as you alluded to, because I know that the people listening to this, they will want some practical tips, because teachers are practical. So what can we do practically as teachers so that we can feel better, and how we can manage our tutorials better and our lectures better and overcome some of these challenges?
Yeah, I think that really is a really important and key question, because I think that's what it's all at. You know, the first thing is personal self-care.
Yeah.
Because without it, we burn out and we can't do what we love to do. And we can't be good to anyone if we don't self-care. And how do we self-care each day? I think many times as a psychologist in my practice, you know, this is a really key thing. And as an educator, you know, I think taking breaks is an important thing. I know that there's a difference in my days when I have a day where I have appointments on the hour and one meeting is running late, so I have to finish that meeting and go straight to another.
Yes.
So I really now try to organize my day so I can take breaks. I think eye exercises are important. We were talking about looking down the screen, and there's many eye exercises that we can do.
Do you mean structured movements for the eyes in different directions, away from the screen, side to side?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I remember that in my previous healthcare training, and about how it affects you neurologically in a positive way. Yeah.
Yes, well, absolutely. You know, there's all kinds that you can, you know, look, other exercises where you look at an object that's near. So I'm, you know, in my office, I'm lucky enough to have a window so I can look at my garden, and then I can step far away into the hill that's, you know, in my view. And just to do that every hour, trying to do that, you know, and that's I find that's good for me. I think rest is important, you know, because we're working from home. I think our email traffic has increased.
Yes.
And now I'll work through it. I just go, this is the time I'm working up to, and then I'm going to rest, because that's important to make me ready for the next day. I think movement, we've spoken about. And I think when you also said, what can we do practically to help the students feel better and for us to feel better, let me pause on technology for a moment. I think that there are five, in the literature, in pedagogy literature and teaching literature around technology, there are five themes that have come up. The first is familiarizing ourselves with the technology that we're using. So an example is somebody said to me the other month, Teams has now got breakout rooms. And I got ready for, I was just about to go into lecture. I thought, oh God, I wish I had practiced before.
Yes.
And of course the Teams breakout rooms would not work because somebody then said to me, well, you needed to be the first person to start the lecture or the seminar so that you can sort people out into breakout rooms. So familiarization is really important, and it's ongoing with advancing technology. Mm. Getting used to using technology, utilization, the more we use it, the better I think we get at it.
Yes.
Integration, integrating it so that it's mingled with other ways of teaching, So I've, for example, integrated it with flipped teaching. So I used to do flipped teaching in class, and now I still use technology to do flipped teaching.
Yes. So we mean by that that the students are actually looking at the content and doing the research before the session so that we can optimize the screen time for discussion and small group work. Yeah.
That's good. Right. And then reorientation, and then the constant evolution of what we're doing with technology, where as a learning tool, it is seamlessly woven into the teaching and learning process. So that's important.
So how can we weave some of these ideas as teachers to help the students feel better practically?
That's a really good question. And I think what I've done is I'm really drawn to relational and collaborative teaching. So often I've said to the students, next week we are teaching on listening skills, for example. How might we want to use the 3 hours that we have between 9 and 1? And then we discuss it. One option is you could read such and such a paper and such a chapter, and so that the students feel and the learners feel that they are a part of that decision making.
So co-design,
right.
Co-decision making. Yeah,
that's really important. I think the other thing is around holding the boundary. I think is important in terms of turning up on time, being clear about what we can or can't do. So it keeps the frame and the structure really clear about what we're doing. I think that helps to integrate.
Do you mean by that, I suppose, as well, sort of clear ground rules?
Absolutely.
Which you might set out at the beginning of the module and then revisit.
Revisit.
Yeah.
I think that's important. Yeah.
What about how we actually behave in terms of our compassion and our niceness and our understanding?
Yeah, that's, and I think boundaries come into that because many colleagues I've spoken to have this, well, if you give an inch, they'll take a mile, and othering people that, whether they're learners or other colleagues. But I actually think, certainly my own writing I write about and research about love and compassion. And I think being compassionate in responses online is really important. And for me, it really aligns with my pedagogy, focus on my relational, authentic presence and communication online when I'm responding. I think this also relates to me engaging in warmth. So what that means, is an example is you will have heard this phrase, and it's driving everyone to the end of the earth, is the phrase, you're on mute, you're muted.
Yes.
and just
it's
using
the phrase
that,
of 2021.
Well, it is. And just using that to engage laughter, to show each other our humanity, every one of us has done, certainly I've done it. I mean, maybe other colleagues haven't, but I've certainly done it. And I found laughter in that. I think that being able to listen to other people's trauma. So sometimes what's happened is people have come on. I usually have in a lot of my lectures, I always start with a check-in, just put in the chat where you are, what's the weather like, what's happening this week. And people love that, you know, learners love that, from showing us a cat. And it doesn't need to take time, but it just says, we are human, we're living in extraordinary times. And it's become a part of my pedagogy in terms of warmth.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I suppose it doesn't have to take time, and it just shows that there are humans around them and teaching them as
yes.
well.
Yes, it does.
They're part of something.
It does. It absolutely does. And I think that, you know, I draw a lot from Ubuntu philosophy, sort of African pedagogy, which is about belonging. And we know that a lot of research has shown that where learners and educators feel they belong, they are engaged more. And there's something about how do we build a learning community where we can learn from each other, where we are offering warmth, where we're offering acceptance and genuineness and authenticity. And that mingled with our proficiency in the technology, I think has really been bearing fruits for me in terms of student engagement.
I think as well, you know, that this belonging has bigger effects as well, because there's mm-hmm. lots of research to show that if you feel you belong to a learning community, it builds resilience, it mm-hmm. builds actually your continuation and completion mm-hmm. stats improve. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Students stay on the course, and universities have a duty to, if they register and enroll a student, to try and see them through that study.
Right.
And one of those big factors is that community of belonging. So it may have has a beautiful effect on the individual classroom, but it also has a really good effect in terms of their continuation and progression. So it has a double whammy, really. What about in terms of some other things that you can do, perhaps around expectations mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. the human to human relationship?
Yes. So expectation is a really good mm. one. And I always think that's important, and that fits into boundaries, for us not to set unrealistic expectations.
Yeah.
So I get lots of emails, maybe sometimes 80 emails in one day. And I have to let others know that because what tends to happen then is you get another email the next day. Did you get my email yesterday?
Yes.
Worse still, you can get an email that day later in the day. I send you an email this morning. Did you get it? and there's something about not setting unrealistic expectations. So what I tend to do now is I tend to say to all those who know me, I get a high volume of emails, and every email is important. It's not just one I can ignore. So I will either say, don't expect a response in less than 72 hours in moments of really high traffic.
Yeah.
And that helps me to self-care as well. Now, I'll always try and respond as soon as I can. But also at times, I will send a holding email that just says, you know, just copy and paste. Thank you for your email. Just to let you know, I'm experiencing high volume, but I will be back. And that helps.
Takes the stress away, doesn't it?
On both sides. So that's important. I also think human to human relationships. I try where I can to make a phone call. When we were face to face, I would go and knock on someone's door, you know, colleague's door, or say to a student, you know, rather than us send 10 emails back and forth, let's meet face to face. And we would cover, you know, huge content. So that's important. The last few bits I want to say about focusing on body language, and I tend to call this embodiment in online environments. And what I mean by that is I find that if I'm teaching online, I have to be measured. I have to be in awareness of what I'm doing moment by moment. And this relates to using my character. And we've spoken about this in fairness, because this bit is actually come from you from listening to you and watching you work. Many times the face flow, our positive phrases, looking into the camera and pausing and smiling, because otherwise we just speak, and particularly for colleagues of two screens, we're looking at one screen and not at the camera, and the people at the receiving end just shake their heads and think, I don't feel
disengage.
yes.
It takes a lot of energy though, doesn't it, on the teacher to behave like that constantly, which is why this importance of rests and breaks and not having too long timetabled sessions is mm-hmm. really important to protect the teacher, because it takes a lot of energy to be like that all the time.
It really does. But and this would be my last point to this question, so which is, it really does, but I feel that it's so worth it if we can pause, if we can smile. And I do it even if I can't see the faces of those that, just holding them in mind. And this comes from developmental psychology, where we talk about mind-mindedness, the idea of holding the other in mind about what would be helpful in this communication and encounter to help the relationship, to help them absorb and take on the content. Then that really is helpful. So, yeah.
See, there's so many good practical tips there, and I think, you know, at the end what we'll say to our listeners is, you don't have to do all of that, but maybe just take one of those things that you've heard, that they've heard you talk about, and try them, and if it works, try another, and if it works, try another. And those are all really good realistic tips. So thank you for that. So in terms of this positive regard and this positive mindset in the university now and going forward in our different roles, not just in the classroom, I suppose, but in our services and with the students. I know that you understand very much about power divides, and you did talk a little bit about the Ubuntu pedagogy. Can you just revisit that and just talk a little bit about building mutual positive regard?
Yes. So with relating to building mutual positive regard, I think it's important really for every one of us to draw from the pedagogy, the philosophical ideas that excite us, that really critique this idea of power, belonging, boundaries.
Yeah.
And for me, my approach, and so I'll just share my approach, but I'm sure the listeners and other colleagues who will dialogue with us about this will have lots to add to this. But my approach draws from Ubuntu pedagogy, which through co-creating and empowering teaching and learning spaces, we can then foster an environment for encountering new challenging ideas, for encountering disciplinary knowledge. And really it is in contrast to the Cartesian dictum, I am because I think. You know, it's really cognitive, yeah. I am because I think. And Ubuntu, yeah. African philosophical ideas say and maintain that I am because I belong.
Yeah.
Now, in many times we would have had Nelson Mandela, for example, draw on Ubuntu philosophy. And I think in the native South African tongues, they have this idea of umuntu, ngumuntu, ngabantu, meaning, I think translated, a person is only a person through a relationship with other persons. And I think that's so important, that if our learners, if we're thinking about power, our humanity comes through our enactment of being welcoming, belonging, being empathic, but at the same time being boundaried. I think that's important.
This sense of connectedness, no man is an island,
no.
That we all belong to each other in different ways.
That's right.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And Burke and other colleagues in 2015 did research that showed that where learners and educators have a sense of academic community and belonging, then evidence shows better student and staff satisfaction. And so I integrate this Ubuntu pedagogy components, which are about fostering a safe learning environment, setting boundaries, enabling collaboration. We've already spoken about core creative learning from a position of love in order to meet the diverse student needs. And the last two points on this, because I'd be really interested to hear what your thoughts are, but for me, I'm also drawn to a colleague, James Derunian, who speaks about inspirational teaching. And all of a sudden I thought, wow, isn't it interesting that now I'm having to think about inspirational teaching online. How can I inspire those that I'm facilitating their learning, and how can I be inspirational through that? And certainly for me, ending then on power, and I know I've left that question about how can I be inspirational, because I think I want to on purpose leave it as a question for the listeners to reflect for their own practice. But ending on power, which was where we started, I want to say three things. The first is power with rather than power over. And this comes from a colleague called Peggy Mattiello, who worked with Carl Rogers, and she always speaks about coming to relationships, thinking about this, having power with rather than power over. Drawing on ideas on power coming from the Ubuntu philosophy is about co-creating the power dynamics and exploring power dynamics together. And lastly, thinking about boundaries and the different kinds of boundaries that we have with colleagues, with learners, because if we can manage those, then the process of education, the process of learning, the dynamics are less stressful for everyone.
Thank you, Divine. That's really interesting. And I think it's so worth actually explicitly before every session articulating that to yourself as a teacher, because we take it for granted. We sort of slosh into roles, we habituate to them, and actually we should be explicitly reflecting on the issues of power that we have. How much have we involved the students? How much have we asked them their opinions? Mm-hmm. How much have we asked them to co-design things and to think of the boundaries we want to create? So it's about bringing it to the, it's foregrounding it, isn't it?
It is. Well, totally.
I suppose. Thank you. And lastly, I'm going to go back to the practical. And Andy, who one of my colleagues was talking about, that we need to challenge our listeners to take ideas forward from what we've been talking about today. And I wonder if perhaps you and I, maybe I'll start, because I think I'd rather hear your more extensive views about one thing that we've really learned from teaching through the pandemic. And what really struck me, one thing that you said, was about preparing your environment and familiarizing yourself. And I ran a session a few weeks ago, which actually I'd run before and was happy with the content. But because I had inadequately prepared my environment halfway through this quite important day, I hadn't charged my computer up and the computer went down. And I realized afterwards, when I reflected on that, that I did two things which were good. I fessed up to the students that I'd made a mistake, and it just went over their heads. They did not mind at all. And I think it's important to, if you make a mistake, just try and laugh it off. And secondly, that actually, if you do prepare your environment better, that actually it puts you in a better position then to try and be more inspiring online. It takes that stress away. You can then move into integrating some of these ideas around small group work, co-design, smiling, body language, without worrying that everything is going to go pear-shaped. So I think fessing up and reflecting on it is really important. And I just wondered if you had any suggestions as well.
Well, have you learnt? Well, thank you for sharing that experience with me and with the listeners. And as you were speaking, I was thinking, just reflecting on it, to me, it really absolutely speaks of number one, authenticity. This is the thing you're calling facing up, authenticity. Yes. And number two, it reminded me of Ruth Behar, who's an anthropologist, I think, whose quote always encapsulates my pedagogical approach in relation to raising the profile for excellence for our colleagues and to support student learning. And Ruth Behar says, one thing remains constant about our humanity, that we must never stop trying to tell stories of who we think we are. Equally, we must never stop wanting to listen to each other's stories. If we ever stopped, it would all be over. And I think, you know, in this podcast, just what you've done is shared with us your story, and we've been encouraging each other to share our stories. But the third thing that your experience reminded me of comes from coaching psychology and colleagues, I think Grove and Lomas back in 2019, who did this study with coaches, and they came up with, from one of the quotes, that says, it's about wholeness. This is referring to us thinking about ourselves as a whole beings, you know. And they said, I love my awesomeness and I love my flawsomeness.
What a lovely quotation.
It is, isn't it? It's about, at the end of the day, when I'm reflecting about my own practice, there are things that haven't gone well, but, you know, the psychologist in me says, I'm flawed.
Yeah.
And there are bits that would have gone really well where an email comes through and says, thank you, I finally understand ABCD better than I've ever done before. And I think, oh, that's great. But both things are a part of me. And that integration into self is so important, not only for my own well-being, but for the learners.
Yeah.
So to come back then to the question, I was just reflecting on being moved by your experience there. The one thing I would share with listeners that I think is important for me and has been really helpful is to try, and I call these micro experience reflections. Now, for me, what this is encouraging the listeners, encouraging the students who are attending class online to, at a point in the, maybe I do this twice or thrice through the lecture, to just say, I would like them to write down or to share in small groups and breakout rooms, what is coming up for them in the moment? What is it that they're learning and what is it that they might be struggling with so far? What is it that they'd like to challenge so far? And even if it might be partial, it might be unfinished in their mind, but then that's really helps the dialogue, internal dialogue and learning to, you know, almost a bite size. What have I learned from what has been said so far? What's been challenging? What do I not agree with? What do I absolutely agree with? And then right at the end, I'll do another one that I call a reflection takeaway box.
Yeah. Like a micro reflection. Is that what you mean?
Right.
Yes. Do they write that or do they take it away and think about it?
Yeah. Well, I've always found, and again, I think this is for me neurological and from neuroscience, that we have a diversity of learners and the way in which we process is different. So usually I'll say, if you can write it, write it. For some people like myself, I have a real kind of imaginative mind. So I might just close my eyes and think, what have I got from today? What do I connect it with? What do I want to challenge?
Yeah.
And then the takeaway box, I sort of think, from today's session, what are the two or three things that I'm taking away with me?
And thank you, Divine. And I think on that note, we'll end today. And I would say thank you. What a fascinating and interesting conversation. Honestly, I could talk about this for weeks. It's fascinating. And it is also, it never ends. It never ends. And it's fantastically brilliant. Thank you for your contribution. I would say to our listeners, within that chat, there are at least 20 things that you could take into your practice if you choose to. And start with one, as I said. If it works, do the next one. And overtly reflect on your own learning and the students' learning. So thank you once again, Divine, for your contribution. And I hope our listeners have enjoyed that podcast.
listen to more in our podcast series, click on the subscribe button. And to keep up to date with the Centre for Learning and Teaching at Leeds Beckett University, follow us on Twitter at Leeds Beckett CLT. Thank you for tuning in.